Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello everyone, welcome to Red Men Radio, the Liverpool podcast. I am Paul Machen and I'm joined by Tom Dutton this week as Chris Pajak celebrates the birthday, not birth, because that was 2 years ago, of one of his daughters. So fair play, Tom, hi.
Yeah, I hope you have a good day. Yeah, it's a weird setup. I'm not used these mics before.
But we have got new microphones, and we used them last week. To be fair, and the arm was broken on one of them, and it led to some severe bodging. But no, I'm pleased to say that they were strong and stable.
Yeah,
you know, unlike the British government. kick off question.
Keep it out of football, Paul.
So just to. Yeah, someone commented about Brazilian politics on our Red Men subscribers Facebook group, and someone reported the post. I don't know the lad. We're not going to get sucked into it.
So tempted to dive in.
Anyway, Liam MGSN at Liam EJM on Twitter says, Melwood is suddenly become engulfed in a battle royale situation. Who's the last man standing? Now, I presume by this, I'm going to go with the modern version of battle royale a la Fortnite, a la PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds, as opposed to the Japanese slasher film.
I mean, I reckon they've just like picked up weapons and gone at each other. I don't think there's many guns in Melwood.
But we're talking about this world where it's an ever decreasing circle that you're allowed to exist within around Melwood. Who for you is the man that comes out on top?
I've got a few, right, because it's Alisson, because he's huge. Is the first thing. Moreno, because he'll run away and hide. But then I was like, no, you've got to think smart. Paul Kelly is the head of physiotherapy, right? He knows every single one of the players' weaknesses.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
Wow, so it's a real outsider. A guy wouldn't be expected. Okay, I like that. To be fair, Moreno, it's quite frankly shocking how often Moreno comes up as an answer to these type of random questions that we get. And I think there's two reasons why. Because I think because of his size thing, I think that plays a massive part, because you can get into like vents and stuff like that.
He's like Dr. No in Goldeneye.
He's more like Oddjob.
Oddjob, not Dr. No.
Clearly the reference you're going for. In Goldeneye on the N64, where he's so much smaller than everyone else and therefore he's harder to hit. Mm-hmm. He is a bit of a cheat. Yeah, he's a bit of a cheat character in that regard. So I think he would be a good chance. I think similarly, in terms of, is it a positional awareness thing that you might need, because you need to know where to be at what time. So are we talking? I mean, Virgil van Dijk is the ultimate man.
Oh, how did I forget about Virgil van Dijk? He's even bigger than Alisson. Like, I don't know. I think, but then maybe stamina comes into it, because James Milner can run for days. Ooh. Obviously, more than the others, he could just run away. He's not the fastest. But sometimes that doesn't matter. Sometimes
you keep bringing this running away thing as a tactic. Well, running into the fray, surely, if you want to win at Battle Royale.
It's true, but I just don't play these games because I'm really bad and scared of them.
Okay, sad. Okay, that's absolutely fine. If this was a game of Rocket League, maybe for next week. Let me know your suggestions then if you're watching or if you're listening. If you're watching on YouTube, in the comments. If you are listening, tweet us using hashtag LFC Battle Royale.
I like that.
And who's your winner? To at the Red Men TV. That would be absolutely magic. News in brief then. James Milner has a hamstring injury off the back of the Man City game. There's talk of him being back by November, with the Arsenal game being targeted for that one. Kenny Lloyd on Facebook asked, what will happen, pardon me, what will happen now that Milner is out for a month?
I'll be devastated.
Really?
I am devastated because I think he's such a massive part of that midfield. Obviously, he's probably, I mean, I was about to say he's not the best midfielder, and I think he is, stats-wise. Yeah. Before the City game, a lot of stats came out, and he was top in terms of every midfielder in the Premier League for quite a few of them, especially in the top five for quite a few of like distance covered, chances created, passes. I had them written down somewhere, but I just didn't bring it down because I'm stupid. But he's a massive part of that rotational system that we've got, and the fact that it's not been a rotational system because he's been so good in there speaks volumes.
Part of me thinks this is a big opportunity. I talk about this a lot and how sometimes players, you can have a sliding doors moment where they might just never get a look in, and then it never really happens for them. But other players, there's an injury crisis, a player steps in. I mean, a perfect example of this right now is both Joe Gomez and Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah.
You could argue for just the right-back situation, but then expand the Gomez stuff out to the centre-back stuff with Dejan Lovren's injury at the back end of the pre-season. So there's something here for Fabinho, there's something here for Keita, there's something here potentially, we've talked about Shaqiri getting a go in the midfield. Adam Lallana's just coming back, he's back in training, another couple of weeks for him might get him ready. I don't think anyone's looking to rely on Adam Lallana these days, but foolish to write him off at the same time.
I think the big thing that he brings is that cover to the fullback. He's just immense at it. You watch him covering Milner. And that's what the other players need to be getting better at. Keita obviously isn't there. We saw that against City when we just stopped using that left-hand side, where Milner can fill in at left-back and Robertson can storm up the pitch. Yeah. And we just don't have that, I don't think, with any other player in the team. So if other people can learn that, then fine. But he's so good and so comfortable on the ball in these tight positions. It's so hard to replace that.
Yeah, you're right. The amount of times where he is left back in that side, and then 2 minutes later he's on the wing crossing the ball in like the opposite wing, and you know how much of the ground he actually covers in that regard. It will require a bit of a rethink, and I think as we saw, in fact, we got a question that we're going to discuss in a bit more depth and detail on the subscriber Q&A.
Sorry, it's wobbling everywhere. I'm just
we're going to discuss Naby Keita in a bit more depth, but we saw him come against Man City, and I think he had to play a bit more of a conservative role than he would normally do.
Yeah.
So, which is telling to how important, again, James Milner's role is. So no, it's going to be very interesting to see. And we've not really talked about Fabinho yet. Could be his big chance, because you could theoretically, we've seen glimpses of this. Maybe it's a chance to see Jordan Henderson further up the field, because he's probably the next best option who understands the full role of the midfield.
That would be nice. I mean, you think about when we were talking about rotation, I think it was late last season and sort of at the start of this one, we always know that we're going to have a rotational sort of midfield, where that's why Gino Wijnaldum can kind of fill in when Hendo needs
everyone
to drop out.
Everyone can do
there.
Everything in that midfield.
Exactly. Yeah. So Fabinho can just slot in and then let Gini and Hendo push on for segments of the game, and then we can slot into a nice two with Gini maybe further forward. That could be a really nice option for our midfield. I want to see more of Fabinho, if I'm honest. And I'm glad now that obviously this applies to a lot of the midfield, that we're going to see it against lesser teams where, look, we're not on the back foot for portions of the game. We're literally just the attackers, and I think we're going to benefit massively.
And having Fabinho in there, if you can make the case that he's more of a DM than Jordan Henderson or than any other midfielder we've got in that team, that, in a very base football logic, provides you with a better platform, with a more stable platform, and maybe he can focus more on the defensive, and maybe you don't need two guys for the job if you've got a Fabinho who's fully integrated. But that's the issue, is at the minute I feel like we'll probably make use of what we've got, as opposed to seeing something drastic, because I don't think we're ready to unleash the next thing. Whatever it may, something we'll pick up again in a second, actually, because we're going to talk about the Man City game. Jadon Sancho being linked. Yeah.
Oh,
please.
So they sold him for 10 million to Borussia Dortmund.
City
did. They offered him 30k a week to stay, and he was like, no, because I want to play more football, which is amazing. He's probably looked at Kevin De Bruyne in there and gone, well, he's left and now he's the best player in the Premier League because he's not getting stifled at Chelsea.
Yeah.
And obviously it didn't really work out with the other guy who left, who's now lower down the Premier League, can't remember his name, played in Germany squad, doesn't matter. But it's one of them where he's going there and he's lighting it up.
Yeah.
He's really, really good. And he's English, which can just get all the English players.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that exactly. I agree on this. I think you're seeing a few of these players doing this kind of stuff. You saw Adam Ola-Luchman go on loan to Leipzig last season from Everton, and then not this season, and he's not really getting, you know, he's not fitting in with Everton this season at all. He's one, I keep coming back to this, Liverpool are one player light, I think, for the front three, and I've been saying, the model for me, the if you were going to do a search on whatever footy-related game that you're playing, it is age between 19 to 21, and it's pace, and it's, you know, and it's an eye for goal as well. And I think he fits that. I don't know whether it is him, but, you know, I'd reference like a Ryan Sessegnon and a couple of these, and we talked about Pulisic have been mentioned in the past, etc. The English connection, I think, will work well in our favour. It's a daft thing to consider, but Daniel Sturridge being at Liverpool has got that, you can go, having left Man City as a kid, going to Chelsea, you've got him as well, and obviously an English connection to be able to go, mate, look, if you want to do this, Liverpool's a good place to come. I think you've got a potential there. But yeah, that's the kind of players we should be looking to target.
It's the price for me though, 100 mil, and City have the first refusal, don't they, which is massive for me. I think Man City can literally just go, yeah, sorry, we offered you 30k a week, you are obviously much better than that. Do you want to be a regular first-team player? Obviously, you're battling with Sané and Sterling, which is miles harder than battling with no one for cover for Mané, really. But it's one of them. Get him if we can, because
100 million's ludicrous. Yeah, and I don't think he would. I think the only thing that makes that difficult is the Usman Dembele to Barcelona stuff, because Dembele was never worth in excess of 100 million. It was just the situation that developed. But once you've set that precedent, and Dortmund are not soft when it comes to selling people, and particularly the German league is not soft, because they see English clubs coming and rub their hands together, don't they? So yeah, that would be difficult in that mode. But you can't look past. I think there's obviously, we've got the Klopp Dortmund connection is still a nice thing, and the fact that, you know, there will be links there to Sancho. So yeah, I would be perfectly happy if us to do this, and keep coming back to it. Who's asked about the money? Because if you can get someone and he's good, and he's got the potential to go on and better our front three over a longer period of time, then yeah, great.
And it's a different type of player. I think the amount of assists he's scored from the positions that he's playing, he would fit right into that team. But I think he'd fit the mold of kind of going into the 10 in a weird, you know, like how Mane likes to play it, or Klopp likes to play Mane, I should say. Just going, obviously we could play it as a winger, drift in and let us play through the centre a bit more. I think he'd be perfect for that.
Brilliant. Mohamed Salah, at time of recording, had 52% of the public vote for the Ballon d'Or. Obviously, Salah does not lose public votes. I mean, ultimately, it has no bearing on who wins the Ballon d'Or, so it doesn't really give us any strong indication. I felt strongly at the back end of the season that if we'd won the European Cup, and if he'd gone on and had a good World Cup, he didn't even need to have a great World Cup. If he'd say gotten Egypt out of their group, I think he could have won. I think he could have won this. I just don't think he can.
That's it. I mean, he hasn't done enough, which is mad. He's Premier League top scorer, hardest league to really get that, being pushed by a very good striking in Harry Kane and others, Sergio Aguero as well, Raheem Sterling. It's hard for me because obviously I want him to win it. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's. Like, he is worthy of it because he's unbelievable and he's Mohamed Salah and he's the best player ever.
Yeah.
But look, Messi, Ronaldo won the Champions League.
Yeah.
And scored a hat trick in the World Cup.
Yeah, and you've got Modric won the Champions League. You've got the final of the World Cup. You've got the French lads inevitably.
Mbappe.
I think there's going to be a clamour to get Mbappe. I think footy is waiting for this Ronaldo Messi takeover. Who's going to surpass them as the best players in the world? I do have a slight feeling that we're probably going to get one more season of it being Messi or Ronaldo, and Ronaldo's an easy enough one because again, he's just won back to back European Cups or
he's
whatever.
And he's moved to Juventus, and he's by all accounts, not doing the business, but he's doing all right over there. Mm-hmm. He's still fit, you know what I mean, for his age. He's done it for so many years. I think you're right. I think it is just going to be one of them two, and it's Ronaldo.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, we're not going to go too much in depth on the news and stuff. We do that on the Reds News Roundup Show. That is our good friend Steve Hall Show on the RedmenTV.com, where all of these points, presumably, and a whole lot more, because Steve runs Read Liverpool.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he knows all of the stories. He knows all the inside track.
He is good at it, to be fair. I mean, really, there's always some... It's not all... There's some fun and games in there as well. I'm behind the camera for quite a few of them. They're just boss.
Yeah, brilliant show. So get over there and watch the Reds News Roundup, which will be going out on Thursday this week on the website, as well as a whole host of other things as well, to be fair, including our interview with Bruce Grobbelaar, which is very, very good. Manchester City at the weekend just gone then, Tom. 0-0 draw. I think it's fair to say, and it seems to be the common thread coming out of this analysing the game, was there was a lot of respect shown on both sides.
Oh, definitely. And I think a lot of respect, but both teams still had a go, and I think it was a testament to both teams' positional awareness, the defensive shape, I should say, I guess, and we just stifled each other, and not even in a bad way. It wasn't a bad game. I really enjoyed watching it, and as a neutral, I think that's the perfect way to watch a game. That's the best 0-0 I've ever seen. Let's put it that way. Because both teams were going for it.
Yeah.
There was saves at either end. It could have been won. It wasn't won. And the two best managers, really, in the Premier League, with the two best teams in the Premier League, it's always going to be a good game.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I can't unpick Liverpool's start and more importantly, the recent run of fixtures that we've had. And we're going to come on to talk comparatively how Liverpool's season stacks up to Chelsea, City and some of the outsiders at the minute, obviously Arsenal, Chelsea in part two. But yeah, I'm happy with where it is.
Yeah.
Because the risk reward thing, whilst the reward is great, being 3 points clear of City doesn't win you the league. No. But being 3 points behind and then being on a run where you've lost two games back to back, or you've lost three of your last four games, etc., etc., and the psychological damage of having that, I think we, on the balance of it, I think our approach, I've made peace with our approach. I'd have liked to have seen us just go and win that game.
Yeah.
But on the balance of it, yeah, fair enough.
People just don't win games like that against City. City are one of the hardest teams to come up against. If you watch Chris's stat show, which went out before today, which is boss, he goes on there, and there's a graph which just shows Liverpool and City concede both the least amount of chances every single game, and City are the ones who concede the least.
The two best defensive records in the Premier League so far this season.
And you've got to always be careful. There's a reason why first half we didn't push our wing-backs up, our full-backs up so high. It's because you can't do that against City. We did in the second half when we created a bit more space and let Joe Gomez go up. And look, we could have got a few goals from that on another day if the balls were better. Mm-hmm. And the ball to Sturridge was a great ball, but it just didn't have enough pace on it, and he couldn't direct it towards goal fast enough. But I mean, you've got to show respect, to go back to the start. You've got to. It's Pep Guardiola. It's the champions. It's such a tough game.
It's coloured by the fact that we have a really good record against them at Anfield.
It's true. Yeah.
And that's what makes it takes a little bit off the shine off it to some extent, because there will always be that feeling that we've really got a hold over them at Anfield. And I think it was telling that Pep Guardiola, who has been so bullish in talking about how he's never going to change his approach and his approach is his approach, etc., etc., that even he adapted. They didn't go for it. We said this, for as much as people say we should have had a go, we should have put Salah on, we should have put Shaqiri on, and we should have put an extra man, and we should have really, really gone for the gains, take it by the scruff of the neck. They didn't do that either. It's not like City smelt blood and thought we're going to push on here. It was played on a knife edge, and you know, it was going to take. I said in one of the reaction shows to it that it felt like it was bubbling under. One goal was going to kick it all off, but equally, the one goal ultimately would have been what absolutely decided the game. So yeah, I think it was, I guess if you're a negative sort of person, you can say both managers kind of bottled it. But at the same time, I think Pep Guardiola will be happy because they've got a terrible record at Anfield, and a point is a good point for them. And I think if we'd played them in February, I think this would be a more disappointing result.
Yeah.
But given who we played and given the run of games that we've just come out of, I think I can look at that the first eight Premier League fixtures and include the games that we've played in Europe as well and go, yeah, you know what, fair enough.
I think another thing for me is the momentum thing, and obviously not a winning momentum, but it's a momentum of, I think I'm right in saying we haven't conceded a goal at Anfield in the Premier League this season. I think I'm right in saying we haven't, did we lose against Chelsea at Anfield? Is that,
when's that?
That was 2-1.
Oh yeah.
So in the Premier League, we haven't lost at Anfield, and you've got to keep that kind of thing going. Mm-hmm. And obviously that could all go against the next team we play at Anfield.
I feel like I saw a stat, and I don't know how true this is, that I think we've kept 10 consecutive clean sheets. That's at brilliant. Anfield. And it's Twitter, so it's not corroborated, but if someone wants to validate this for me, I think Man United, it's the last time I've seen something that was Man United back in like 92 or so, or 93 or something.
Yeah. But defensively, we played really well. Obviously, they could have won it, but we stopped them having so many shots on goal. This team that creates chances is so fluid in attack, and we just went, no.
I look at the games, the amount of times Man United have come to Anfield, and it's more prevalent under Mourinho, and he's come and he's done a park the bus job, and he's sort of nullify what Liverpool do, because there's more benefit getting a point and showing the world that the opponents can be stopped.
Yeah.
And you're, it's a sign of defensive strength, is got a real positive value.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Yeah, look, If we'd absolutely trounced them 4-0, you saw what message that sent last season when they did that to us at the Etihad. That was an option available to us, but there's the same notion of, there's bits that, and look, some people can do this to Liverpool too, but there will be lessons that the other teams will watch that and go, how did Liverpool keep City quiet? This is the areas of the pitch where they were defending, and you know, in a perfect world, maybe we've set a little bit of a template to stop City, because I still think people think they can stop Liverpool from scoring, whereas Man City have built up this aura of absolute invincibility. Like, you know, we're going to come, we're going to absolutely kill you.
And I think, talking about lessons learned, Klopp will have looked at that Chelsea results, both of them, and gone, we are getting battered on the wings here because we're leaving too much space in behind when we push them on. And again, we've changed our game plan really well. And I think, obviously, we're talking about the run later, but the run that we've had has been so tough and demanding on these players. We haven't really rotated at all in the midfield, especially. And to come out of this with the points that we've got, joint top, we're on City's heels, we're on Chelsea's heels, and we can push on from this.
Yeah.
We've got a few easy fixtures. I'm saying easy because no fixture's easy.
Yeah.
But look, we've got Huddersfield next, and they're not doing very well. We just go out there and just go, there we go.
Yeah.
And we can now start progressing against a few easy teams where we have the ball, let us show other people our free scoring, because that's what City have done when we've not had the chance to do that.
Those top six clashes are so important. I think they're going to be vital this season. Not in so much as they're going to be the things that win. Maybe they're the things that ultimately decide the title, but I think the thing to them is that people are looking to them as being, here's a good chance for a six-pointer, here's a good chance to put some distance, and that's why there's probably a value to nullifying those games. And then what do? You leave it down to your ability to put everyone else away. And what Liverpool have shown so far, and we're kind of going into part two, but we'll pick up on this in a minute, is that we're showing already that we can handle the other teams, because the only points we've dropped so far have been against good teams.
Yeah.
And okay, it's very small sample range, but the fact that our closest opponents have dropped points against teams that they should be beating, that should be seen as a positive for Liverpool.
The only negative I can kind of take from it is we should be winning our home games against these big teams.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, City are going to go at the Etihad. We won 3 points against Liverpool. Obviously, we did that against Spurs, which was great. But that's the only negative I can take from it. You're taking a point from the champions, and let's not forget, look, we can say that Liverpool are the best team. I firmly believe we are the best team in the world, because that's just who I am. I'm a Liverpool supporter. But you've got to know your level sometimes as well, and City are right next to us on that level.
I think there's a potential there where people can like look at the season and go, oh, we'll extrapolate that out over the full length of the season. Liverpool won't win the league. And it's like, yeah, but to be fair, they've still got to play. They haven't played Chelsea.
No.
and they haven't played Spurs yet, who we have played.
Yeah.
And as much as, yes, we've got to go to City at the Etihad, and that'll be important. And if we lose that, then not having picked up the extra 2 points at Anfield could prove to be important. But it puts loads more pressure on them to get that, because, yes, they've got that advantage. But as I say, there's going to be game weeks where they've got to play Chelsea and they've got to play Spurs. And as the full season average, they will be equivalent weeks where we're playing someone far more beatable than they are in those. So there's an opportunity there where if City drop points like we did at Chelsea, well, Liverpool will capitalise twice there, because we will pick up if we win our game week, we'll pick up 2 points on both of our nearest rivals. So, you know, that's why it's interesting to look how the season's likely to pan out, which we'll do momentarily. Cool. Before we dive into where we're at and looking at, you know, at comparisons with the last season, etc., which is really interesting stuff, a little plug for a wonderful show that we have on the RedmenTV.com, hosted by my partner in crime today, Mr. Tom Dutton, and that is the Man of the Match podcast.
So look, Dejan Lovren, 4 clearances in the game, 4 out of 5 tackles won, 8 out of 11 duels won, 87% pass accuracy and 4 out of 10 long balls completed. And look, he's came in against the best attack in the league. They're slotted in. Joe Gomez has been fantastic, and he hasn't put a foot out of it. Like, obviously, apart from that one silly mistake, which didn't cost us, so it doesn't matter, he didn't put a foot wrong, and he made some brilliant tackles in there. That one from Jesus stands out to me, where he just goes, right, he's coming at me, I could let him go in the box and then it might be a danger, or I just put a foot in, made a brilliant tackle and then just strode away with it. A few of them just no-nonsense clearances into the stands, and that's what you need when you're playing against a team like City. You need just to just go, no, we're going to stifle everything that you do. City let him have the ball and he used it quite well for me. It's not something that he's always been very good at, but he fires balls along the ground into Mo Salah's feet, into Bobby Firmino's feet, and it just helped us kind of build from the back like that. And I just thought, you're coming in to that defence, you've got to be good. And he was.
Yes, so after every match, Tom and his little gang of merry men get together, interact with the viewers, get your polls, get your thoughts on the best players, talk through it. It's a belt a little
bit. Yeah, show. I enjoy it. It's different from the final word, and the final word is a roundup of the whole game and encapsulates everything. It's brilliant. But the man of the match is focusing on players individually and talking about their role in the team and how they performed and what we want to see from them, and how, you know what I mean, just that kind of thing. We focus in on the players, and I think it makes for a different discussion. Anyway. Yeah,
it adds into our full roundup of every game. Obviously, as Tom mentioned there, we've got the final word show. We obviously do a bit on this podcast as well. We've got the instant match reaction show that goes out on YouTube immediately after the game. Then we've got the stats and tactics show that Chris is doing. So, you know, whether you want to look at the game as a whole in a more light-hearted sense, whether you want to look at it from a deep dive statistical point of view, or you want to look, as Tom says, about the players, we've got you covered on the RedmenTV.com. So get over, if you enjoy what we're doing here, we've got the podcast version of everything, so you can get it on your phone, you can get it on the go, or you can have it on your telly, or you can have it on your desktop as well. And we've got a site revamp coming this week, very, very exciting, loads of very cool new features, lots of stuff that people have been asking us for, we're finally going to be able to deliver upon.
It looks boss.
It does look very, very good. So yeah, stay tuned for more news on that, of course. But yeah, in the interim, go over some amazing content that we're producing there, exclusive stuff as well. You know, we've got this interview with Bruce Grobbelaar coming up this week, which was great. We had him in the studio. He's nuts. He's absolutely nuts.
I'm currently editing that, and there's bits where I've watched it like 5 times and I keep laughing at bits because it's an insight as well. You're sitting there, often you talk about a lot of goalkeepers come out and go, well, how can you judge my position when you're not a goalkeeper? And he has some insight into our ex-goalkeepers and current goalkeepers.
Yeah, absolutely phenomenal. That, and of course, the off-mentioned Jurgen Klopp interview. It's 3 years since Jurgen Klopp took over. I sat down with him in the summer. That full interview's on the website. There's a little bit with Trent Alexander-Arnold from the back end of last season. Lucas Leiva. A year ago, in fact, we were in Rome chatting to Lucas. Yeah, that's on there as well. Really, really good stuff. So yeah, anyway, plug over. Get over to RedmenTV.com. Sign up. It's free for the first month. You can go and have a little look around and see how you get on. Anyway, let's have a little bit of a look at a wider sense then, Tom. Obviously, we've reached this international break, and I think it was either William Ross or Bailey put out some up the reaching the international break in a GIF, and I started it and realised that, you know, I have very limited time, and finding quite the right GIF wasn't really necessary for me, but it was one of have a big sit down and have a big sense of palpable relief, because this has been a fairly grueling few weeks.
It has been, and I think it's tested our squad, which obviously we know that it's a really good squad and it's been bolstered. But like you're looking, you can't. Sometimes you just can't use. You can't use Fabinho and Shaqiri and Keita all the time because yeah. they're not fully integrated yet. And that was the hardest thing for me. We've come up against PSG in a Champions League tie. I know it's group stages, but that's a tough game and we've won that. And there's so many, like, so I've got here, we won 7, drawn 2, lost 2. Last season, in 11 games, we'd won 5, drawn 4, lost 2. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that's already a step up. And last season, we had lesser opposition in terms of, like, Champions League and stuff.
Yeah, and we still had one of the... Paul Tompkins has done a fantastic article on this on the Tompkins Times. I referenced it on the latest video on my personal YouTube channel. But I'll reference it again because it's brilliant. In fact, his whole website's brilliant as well. Mm-hmm. But he talks about this is Liverpool's hardest start to a season that they've had in the Premier League era. And last season was that up until that point as well.
Yeah.
What I think is really interesting, we talk about using the squad. This is where our approach has been different this season. And why I think this international break is massive, provided everyone comes back healthy.
And they're still playing games over there because it's the Nations League. If you want to see a massive argument on that, Ross and Ben had a massive argument on that on the Iran League podcast, which is out today.
Let me have a guess. Ben likes the idea of the Nations League.
Ben really likes England. Ross, not. I don't think they like the fact that they're playing more games, but Ben wants to see more England.
I think I wonder how much of your percentage of wool you are means that you like England or not.
Well, I'm on the sliding scale. So
well, exactly. But like Ross is slightly less wool.
Yeah, yeah.
He's from Southport. He's from Merseyside, isn't he? Like, you know what I mean? Ben's is Wigan. Is that Greater Manchester? Or is it Wigan? I don't really know. It doesn't really matter. It's only a funny comment. yeah.
Sorry to derail you completely. By the way.
Sorry. Yeah. But what's really interesting was a point made to me about chatting to me cousin about this week, and he made a really interesting point, was Liverpool at the first half of last season were the most rotated side in the Premier League by an absolute mile, not just by a couple of players. Like, it was massive. It was a gulf between us and the next side, the amount of players that have been used or rotated 11s. And you mentioned it before, we haven't really done that when you consider it. By and large, the players you've got, your 11 that started against the weekend, you'd swap, obviously, Gomez to centre-half, Trent at right-back. You've got that, and then it's been more or less probably at this point, it's about equal between Henderson and Keita in terms of the minutes they've played. And then in addition to that, like Daniel Sturridge, you look at his stats in terms of goals and goals to games, and it's like, oh, that's a decent return. He's played 46 minutes in the Premier League this season, and he's got 3 goals or something, which is sound. You then look at Shaqiri, who's been used very, very sparingly, and Fabinho, I don't think Fabinho's even been used in the league yet. Am I right in saying he came on in Europe, didn't he?
Yeah, he's not been used in the league.
Yeah, so he
came on for Chelsea League Cup. Yeah
so he's we have by and large pretty much used 13, 14 maybe players. Yeah. And that is a stark contrast to what we did, but it's telling. Looking at the league table from this time last year, we're now on 20 points, haven't played 8. We've dropped the points by 2 draws. This time last year, we were on 13 points. We're already 7 points better off after 8 games played in the Premier League. We're on 20 points, sorry, now.
Oh, yeah.
Is that, what did I say?
You said 20, but I thought we were on 18.
Now?
Yeah.
No, we're on 20 points.
Oh, yeah, cool, sorry.
Okay.
Carry on.
Thanks, Tom.
I was just baffled. I was like,
Okay, how do you think we would have constructed 18 points?
I don't know. I read it on the internet.
Oh, wow, there you go. This is corroborated and it is an actual fact. Don't be sucked in. This is not a Donald Trump broadcast. Liverpool are right now, this season, 18, 19 on 20 points.
That's what I said, really, yeah. Swear to God, I said 20.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Joint on 20 points with Man City and Chelsea. Of course, we're in third on goal difference. This time last year, after eight played, we had 13 points, so we're already seven points better off. The goal difference is more is the stark one. We've actually, despite the fact that people talk about our attack not clicking yet, we've scored two more goals this season than we had done at this point last year. We've only scored 13 and we conceded 12 to this season three. So this time last year, we were 7 points worse off and we were 11 worse off in goal difference. We were just plus one goal difference. City were on 22 points this time last year, which means that, we were, 9 points behind Man City already this stage of the season. And it's telling as well, their output's slightly lowered this time around. They've actually scored about four less goals and they've conceded one less, but kind of by the by. That, for me, is for whatever the criticisms are of how Liverpool might be playing and any worries about how we are in an attacking sense, we are level on points at the top of the league.
Yeah.
We are actually performing better than we did last season, and we've taken a completely different approach to doing this. And this is a double edged sword. I realise I'm talking a lot of time. I will come to you. We haven't rotated, so we've doubled down on this stretch of the season. I think, and that's the one thing that we're going to have to get into a swing of yet, and that's where a big X factor remains. We haven't integrated these new lads properly into the team yet either.
It's brilliant. I mean, I love the defensive side of football, and we've got a settled back five now, Paul. Yeah. And we've got players, Dejan Lovren came in and can be a part of that and not unsettle it. And
we've just rotated two of our back five
that's
been totally established so far this season. It's been the best defence we've had in God knows how long. And we kept a clean sheet against the champions.
It's unreal. Like, I just love the fact that everyone now knows their role. And that was the big thing for me last season. And since Klopp came in and under Rodgers, no one knew what was going on at the back. And now everyone's calm, everyone's collected, everyone knows what's happening. And that's massive. Even the defensive rotation from the midfield, and I talked about James Milner and Robertson before, but even on the other side where the fullbacks know they can push up and the defensive midfielders know when to drop in, they know all the roles in, it's seamless, everything's coached perfectly, everyone knows what they're doing, and that's why we haven't changed it up, because you've got to keep that mould and then show Fabinho, see what that player's doing there. This is what you're learning this is what you're learning on the training pitch. Naby Keita, this is what you need to learn. Obviously, you want your further forward, but you're going to have to know this stuff anyway. And it's just the only thing for me is the front three's not clicking, but then we don't have that attacking mid. That's what Keita needs to be. Mm-hmm. But because we've come up against these amazing sides, we've not been able to flourish in that
I've seen two different people message me once on Twitter, and I got one in a YouTube comment, and it was, do we think the Buvac is the reason why we're not attacking as well? And I think this is the thing I have, is that we look for conspiracy theories, we're looking for like reasons to be dead doom and gloom and negative about things. I say it again, league wise, we are scoring more goals than we did this time last year. And this was a team that got better as the season wore on. That was a team that ended up in the European Cup final. And equally, what people continue to overlook, and yet it's actually been a major discussion point, Buvac left at the same time that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain got injured. So we lost that guy, who was the guy who actually helped us kick up a level last season as well.
I think it's hard. We've seen Liverpool teams focus on attack.
Where's it got us?
Exactly. It's got us great football, amazing games of football and just excitement, and they've scored a goal but we've just scored three and then they've scored another one. But now we're seeing a Liverpool team focusing on defence, and for me, obviously the football's not fantastic, yeah. but we've still got the quality up front that's slotting these chances away that you need to do when you're a top team. But we're building from the back, and it's what Mourinho's built titles upon.
You don't win the league in the first 8 games or the first 15 games, but you can absolutely throw it away.
Exactly.
And too often, and again, let's rewind the clock, 12 months, we were 9 points off the pace in the title race after 8 games yeah. played. And that was done the second, but you know, basically the second that we left the Etihad, it was almost done and dusted psychologically as well. I think we were a bit broken after that. We have doubled down so far this season on making sure, because we won't know, and this is my strong suspicion. I thought we were going to go and try and blitz the league very early on this season, and I actually think it doesn't feel like we are because we're not battering teams, but we have put our strongest team out and we've gone to get as many points on the board with an established team. We've not gambled by trying new systems or doing anything mad along the way, apart from that first half against Southampton where we experimented with Shaqiri. Because you need to be there or thereabouts, and I don't think any one of us would have expected to be level on points at the top of the league at this stage given the run of fixtures, but that's where we are, and we've earned the right to be there. Now, it's a gamble in so much as I say, we've not integrated these new lads yet, but we didn't. There's a lot of those new lads weren't integrated this time last year either. No, even the likes of James Milner, who'd been at the club for 2 seasons, wasn't integrated in the midfield. It was only, I think I'm right in saying, it was around the Maribor game he started to come in.
Yeah.
And that was when his season kicked off, and he was with a real...
Robertson as well.
Robertson was like December before we started to see Robertson play for us consistently. So we've got the gamble here of we are going to have to integrate these lads, and that might, you know, because we've had this in the past under Rodgers, we stuck to one team too much in 13-14, and then when we needed those extra lads, they were just totally out of rhythm. If we can do that, and I think this is what we're doubling down on, I think what we're actually bringing in is 3 lads who are completely fresh in a season where everyone's legs are going to fall off at the bat in the last 2 months of the season because of the World Cup.
It's brilliant, and I think even it's mad because I wonder whether we're going to change formations in a way and go to a 4-2-3-1 like we did when Klopp first came in, because I'm wondering is it going to be Fabinho, Hendo, and then let Naby kind of sit up there, especially against some of the lower teams in the league? We've just got so much scope for doing loads of stuff. It is a mad one. I trust in Klopp to do whatever he's going to do, because I've trusted him and he's been amazing.
It's interesting because it was a point raised, I think it was Graeme Souness might have raised it, and the Echo talked about it, was look at the 3 midfielders that we were targeting this summer, albeit we'll add Keita into it, even though it was the summer before. Fabinho, Keita and Fekir, all 3 of them could potentially have played in the same team, and then you've got your proper 6, you've got your box to box but more attacking box to box in Keita, and then you've got your driving creative goal scoring 15 goal a season attacking mid in there as well. And I wonder whether, as much as people keep saying this, and I know Chris is a big advocate of this 4-2-3-1, I still look at what Man City are doing and I still wonder whether that's where we're still moving towards having that. Because I think last season, I think we'd have had that. I think if Lallana had stayed fit and Coutinho hadn't been a gobshite, I think we might have started the season with them two as more of a more 5-5 effectively. You've got your back 4 and your 6, and then you've got your 2 attacking mids linking up with your front 3. Yeah. So there's as much potential we actually go even bolder in that
and
regard.
And that's the big thing, is we said at the start of the season, look, we knew Oxlade-Chamberlain were going to be out, and then Adam Lallana got injured. But when we did a show on the squad depth, and we were like, this is the position here, this link-up bit, and we just didn't know what was going to happen. And the big blow is the 2 people who are integrated and could show Naby how to get into that. Like, he's having to watch reruns from last season now instead of watching us against Southampton.
Yeah.
Or not Southampton, that's a bad example because Shaqiri was there, but like, you know, it's so hard to show
these players.
Not
watching Oxlade-Chamberlain or even Rwanda of the year, Lallana at the peak doing the role and then going, oh, that's how it's done. Exactly. I get to see it in a live
game
situation.
And it's other players then knowing, because we've had to change our midfield system. We saw it against City. We had a front 3, which they broke through, and then we had a midfield 3, which they had to break through. And that's it. You need to be, I mean, other players in the system. So the right back needs to know that player's going to be there. And if he doesn't know that, because we're playing a different system, it's so hard. And then that's the chopping and changing. And that's why the international stuff so frustrating is I want a week off where he can all sit there and train it through, but he can't do that.
Yeah, of course. Let's have a quick look then, because we've been talking a lot about is obviously Liverpool's opening fixture run. And as mentioned, Paul Tompkins said it's the hardest opening set of fixtures Liverpool have ever had in the Premier League. And I talked about this already, about like the games that our rivals have played and why I'm so pleased with why we are where we are. And I've got them written down in front of me. And it's going to be hard to soak in audio form this, but just talking through, let's start with City. Mm-hmm. City opened with Arsenal, which is fair, but albeit the first game Arsenal have played without Arsene Wenger in 20 years or whatever. They had Huddersfield, they dropped 2 points to Wolves, Newcastle, Fulham, then they had Lyon in the Champions League, Cardiff, Oxford in the League Cup, Brighton, Hoffenheim, and then us. Chelsea had Huddersfield to kick the season off. Then they had Arsenal, which is a mark because that game could have gone either way. Yeah. Newcastle, Bournemouth, Cardiff, PAOK, Salonika, West Ham, us in the Cup, us in the League, Videoton, Southampton.
Nice.
And I look at our running fixtures and I just think, again, how have we managed to accrue the same amount of points? Because it's not even just the league games, it's the cup games in between. Like, I know Lyon beat Man City and Lyon are no mugs, but Lyon are not Paris Saint-Germain.
No.
Lyon are not a top table European side.
No, they're not.
They got Oxford in the League Cup, whereas us and Chelsea had each other. And they've had Hoffenheim, who, as we know, we knocked them out in the qualifying round. They are a good side, but once again, what are they? The third or fourth best team in Germany? This is not Bayern Munich. This is not Dortmund. They're coming up against here.
Chelsea are in the Europa League, so they're getting. To be fair, the travel times for them will have been tough.
Sure, but we've seen it ourselves. You don't have to go full strength.
No, no chance.
When you're that good, you can get it. It's relatively easy. Yeah. There is a little bit of that, and there's always that. There's always that talk about the Thursday to Sunday hangover, which I wonder whether was a contributing factor to the dropping points at West Ham.
Yeah.
It could be argued. So but again, I can see these both ways. I can see is that ultimately, regardless of which way you slice it, who would you rather play? I mean, look, it's a spectacle. I'd much rather be playing Paris Saint-Germain and Napoli.
Yeah.
But by comparison, Lyon and Hoffenheim or PAOK Salonika and Videoton?
Yeah, I know. It's mad. Like, and that PSG game was a slog. Mm. And we won it in the last minute. And it made it sweeter. And I think that's going to spur us on for the future.
We put a lot of energy into that game.
That Napoli away game was so tough. We were watching it here and we were bad. But it's tough over there anyway. That's a hard stadium to go to. Napoli are a fantastic team. You're looking at the team. I didn't realise just how many like superstars they had that I knew.
Yeah.
Mertens plays there and they've got all these.
Well, on paper, it'd be easy. It's easy to say, well, Napoli might not be considered a grade A team. And I get that. I mean, historically, barring the Maradona connection, they're not Juventus, historically AC Milan, Inter Milan, etc. However, two things, and it was pointed out on someone on Twitter, they were miles better than Roma last season, who we thought were a really good team. And the points tally that they got last season would have walked in the league in the vast majority of Serie A seasons. They were pipped at the post, over 90 points by Juventus. So I would still contend that Napoli are a more difficult team than Lyon, as an example of that. And then you look at it, and that last little run of fixtures, the last three fixtures, Chelsea away, Napoli away, City at home.
It's good that, isn't it?
Whereas Chelsea had, of course, us, Videoton, Southampton, and City comparatively came from Brighton to Hoffenheim to us.
And it's the squad thing as well. Obviously, we've bolstered our squad. Both of them sides have amazing squads that are already fully integrated. Exactly. And that's the big thing for me is, like, They've spent so much money. I know we can't really say that anymore, which is kind of annoying.
But historically,
exactly. Over the years, it's the mentality that winning a league puts you in. It's the mentality that having these world class players around you puts you in. And we're getting there now. We haven't won the league, but we've got world class players in every facet of our game. Really, maybe you could argue the midfield doesn't yet, but we're still putting in world-class performances, even if the players aren't classed as world-class. Milner's putting world-class performances this season. Jordan Henderson has, and so is Gino Wijnaldum.
Yeah.
Naby Keita, to be seen.
We've done so far this season, I think, is we've prioritised we've prioritised the league and the Champions League.
Yeah.
And we've not, you know, look at the back end of last season when we really clicked. We rotate. Think about like the Christmas period when we rotated Solanke in for the derby.
Yeah.
And if we'd maybe gone stronger there, we might have taken three more points there, and that has an impact. But we preference certain games. We just haven't done that so far. And I'm not saying that I don't know enough about the teams that our rivals have played but they have got just one or two more guys in the front three, which is helpful to them.
Yeah.
I mean, like a Chelsea example. The difference between Giroud and Morata is very different. There's not much difference between the two of them, to be honest. And they've got Pedro and Willian to rotate on the other wing. You know?
And it helps them. Hazard's been on fire. Imagine if Hazard wasn't on fire, where would Chelsea be?
Exactly. And then equally the Man City thing. They've brought in Mahrez as cover for what was already an absolutely ludicrously potent attacking force. They've had Aguero available to them, which has made a big difference, and they've had Jesus available to them as well. So,
I want to see how City kick on after De Bruyne comes back in. Mm-hmm. I want to see if he's the same player. Sorry, like he's going to be frightening when he gets back, and that's the big thing is. When he comes back, we need to be starting to click up front as well, because they're already clicking up front.
Yeah.
That we've got our break now. We need to take that, and I know we will. I know Klopp's going to sit every single player down and go, "That's it. That's the hardest bit, and you've done it, and you're there. Let's keep going." No.
We it's going to be fascinating to see how we handle it, because we've got the upcoming fixtures next three, just Huddersfield, Red Star, Belgrade, and Cardiff. Now. This has almost gone the other way. We've got the Arsenal game looming as well. But what I'm kind of driving at earlier with that thing is you can't preference of the Chelsea Napoli City game. It's not possible to preference any of those games.
No.
And as I say, it's too early to throw in too many of the new lads and hope that you're going to maintain the level that you want to be at. That's where you end up giving up something. And I don't think it worked in Napoli's regard. We could have done with some fresher legs. To be fair, we could have done with Naby Keita not getting injured in that game. Similarly, Milner in the City game. But you know, let's say as an example, if that had fallen differently, and we had the Red Star game instead of Napoli, you maybe rotate a little bit more for that game, and you've just got a little bit more in your legs for Man City, and you can afford to be a bit more brash, I think, in that City game. So no, again, it keeps coming back to it. I think we've managed it spectacularly. Just briefly, then Arsenal and Spurs seem to be finally clicking. Arsenal are the form team in the Premier League at the moment, 5 wins on the bounce. In fact, they're unbeaten since the first two. They lost the first two, which was against City and Chelsea.
But they lost them, so there you go. You talked before about you can give it up. They need to now catch up. They need to hope that we drop points now, and they need to hope three teams drop points to get in there. You know, and that's they can hope for fourth now.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's telling that we talk about those games and that, you know, where they might be important, those heads to heads, and why I think the top teams will stalemate each other to some extent. Is that in that regard, I think where Arsenal in particular is that. They're still integrating. They're still finding the feet and doing what they do. And I think they're going to batter a load of the crap teams because they've got such good players. I mean, look, they brought Aubameyang off the bench.
It's mad.
And he scored. What did he score? Two. He definitely scored one. Didn't he? He was just a breath of fresh air when he came on, because you're bringing on a world class centre forward to see a game of football out effectively, alongside Lacazette, who's banging them in as well. They've got some really good players, but I think their good players will get them out of trouble in a lot of games. But when you come against the elite of the elite, which is us, Chelsea and City, you have to be absolutely perfect. If you want to win those games, you have to be tactically perfect, you have to be mentally perfect, and as far as the level of your players, they have to be perfect. And I think they've got they're slacking a little bit of quality in their 11s. They're not fully integrated in terms of the tactics of the manager, and I don't think they've quite got the elite mentality at the minute either, which is why I'm not looking over my shoulder and looking at Arsenal too much at the moment.
I'm more worried about Spurs than Arsenal, just purely because you look at some of the players Arsenal have got. They're brilliant players, but in terms of the work rate, I just don't think they've got it there.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. Once you come up, you can get away with a bit less work rate against the lower opposition. You can. But when you're coming up against us, we are going to harry you, hound you. And if you don't have that, like, if you're not switching on, if you're not making runs, pinning us back, then you're getting pinned back the whole game. Yeah. And it's the same with City, it's the same with Chelsea. And I think you're right. Arsenal have some great players, and it could come back to bite us if I say that we're going to beat them. But I think we will beat them, and that's purely because our defence is better than all the other ones. And if they come out and overstretch themselves, like City didn't, mm-hmm. and like Chelsea didn't, we will just go, bang, there's your goal. Mo Salah, get your goals that you need. Mane's got the space to run down the wing. And if we're clicking, look, we nearly scored a few counter-attack goals against Napoli. As much as we were terrible that game, mm-hmm. we had opportunities there, and we just didn't build on them because the passing was terrible. Yeah. We're still clicking, even though we're not clicking.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about any of them.
Yeah, I don't think any team's really at true top form yet. But we also, as you kind of said very early on, in terms of the opponents we've played, the fact that both Chelsea and City have played Huddersfield and Cardiff already this season, they were the two weakest sides in the division, I think is a contributing factor. You know, we've got them next in the league. We do have to go out there and make sure we do take those opportunities to click, of course, but that's what you've got to trust that that's ultimately going to
happen. I guess that's weirdly the test then, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's seeing if we can do what they've done as well.
It's all well and good matching, you know, getting those draws against City and that are pointless if you can't at least match in terms of the results, what they've done against the bottom teams in the league as well. Okay then, brilliant, really interesting stuff actually. I can't believe I've now got to wait 2 weeks before we get to kick this off. I was really looking forward to winding down over the international break, and now I'm really hyped up again. A few questions to get through. We'll be taking more of your questions on the subscriber exclusive Q&A, where we've got about five or six more that we pull from Twitter, from our Facebook subscribers group, and from the post on the website as well. Some of the more random and more interesting stuff, but a couple here to kick us off. Matthew J. Caldwell, based on the progress so far this season, do we go in big for a number 10 in January, or has Klopp got it all under control?
So I've wrote down here, is it worth binning off Ox and changing our system? Because that's what we'll have to do if we're getting a number 10 in there, because we don't play a number 10. We play a number 8.
Yeah.
That's what we play. So, I mean, yes, get one in and have the option to change it round. But Fekir wasn't going to be a number 10, I don't think. He was going to be that midfielder who can drop back in, and That for me is the big thing. I want us to go out there and buy someone like that. But maybe it's a loan. Maybe it's the way Chelsea have done it with Kovacic. Get someone in like that. And I know we don't like doing it, but if you can just say you're a world class player, come in and do a job for us while we wait for that other world class player to come back.
Yeah.
Maybe it's an option.
I hadn't really thought of it like that in terms of the specifics of it being a 10 per se. Because if you think it is a ten, I think Shaqiri can do that job already. It's the question for me is whether Shaqiri can do it, as you say, as the offensive eight.
Even Bobby could do it, to be fair.
Potentially as a 10. Yeah, well, look, we saw it last game of the season against Brighton when we put Solanke up top and Firmino dropped back a row, which was interesting. And I'm surprised we've actually not seen a bit more of that so far this season.
Yeah.
But no, I think as far as a 10 goes, we don't play with a 10. So that's the thing. And if we did shift to that, maybe. But I do. Chris actually referenced it, I think, on the final word, that I would like us, if we were convinced that we needed Fekir, and we were prepared to spend 50 million quid on a guy who was going to bring 15 to 20 goals from midfield, it strikes me that we still need someone to do that job. So I wouldn't mind. But what I still think, we're in that point of the season where we're desperate, we do this in football every single season, we're desperate to draw final unequivocal conclusions about how everything is going to be after 8 games of the season. So much will change, and again, keep referencing it back because it's so valid. Just look at us a year ago and look who we were and look who was playing, and you know, our team was totally dependent at the first half of the season on Alana, who all of a sudden wasn't available to us, and then a Coutinho whose head had been turned by Barcelona and left. So we've got to see. We haven't seen the best of Keita. We haven't seen the best of Fabinho, and we haven't seen the best of Shaqiri. Yeah. If you can just get Keita and Shaqiri more involved or up to speed in that midfield, I think that will cover over a lot of cracks, because that makes it sound like we're in a bad situation. Yeah. I just think that could be the thing that kicks us up a stage rather than having to recruit.
Not really related to that question, but you've just reminded me. Do you remember the 1-1 against Newcastle and everyone's head fell off last season? Yes. And we were literally sat there, we were doing a live YouTube post-match show because we were trialing that out, and everyone in the comments was saying we're terrible, Klopp needs to go, nothing's clicking, we're not doing anything. I was like, we're creating chances, calm down. Not one of them people, if you would have said in the chat, we're getting to the Champions League final and we're gonna comfortably get into the top four. No one would have taken that. They would have called you deluded, mental. Yeah. You've got to take, like you say, let Klopp do his job, let the team do their job. They're good enough to do it. And yes, get another player in that midfield, because why not? You can never have too much talent in the attacking areas. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, I'm quite happy with and content with the fact that these players can do it.
We'll see, won't we? I think by January, we'll know clear about whether Lallana is actually... whether we can get any use out of Lallana. We'll see what Milner comes back, like if he's had an hamstring injury, whether that starts to impact his mobility, because he's getting to that age as well, which is it's a bit doom and gloom to think of it that way, but it is what it is. And then we can have a look and see again how well Shaqiri's integrated, how well Keita's doing, and I think we'll, if we need to spend money, I think we will, but I'm not sure that we will. Here's the thing on that, you're dead right. It's very easy to speak in absolutes about the worst case scenario, because for a start, you can never be proved, and you get to use that the Nigel Farage's defence of I just want the best. I just want the best for my team. Yeah. So I just want the best for this country. It's just such a wanky mentality to have.
Yeah.
Look, not wrong with being passionate about your football club and all that, but there's enough evidence in football every single season to say that good teams get better as the season progresses. Good teams tend to get better in the second half of the season, so it's probably too early to really pass judgment on anything that we've done.
Exactly. We haven't even clicked. Exactly. Our front three aren't even firing at the level they were last season, and we know they can get to that level. It's a matter of time.
Absolutely. Two very brief questions to round it up. Mr. J Blade, good old Jonathan Reed, who is a long-time stalwart of the show on screen, says, what's the soundest I can't be arsed snack? Thinking crisp butties, toast, a whole gamut of pot noodles, etc.
Do you want to start with this one?
I'm struggling with this because the obvious answer is a butty.
Yeah.
It's just a butty. If you're struggling for anything to eat, you put something between bread, either toasted or untoasted, and there you go, you're made. But in trying to make an effort to eat better in the last like 6 weeks, bread is something that you've got to swerve as much as possible.
Which is mad. I remember the first day you came in, you were like, I can only have two slices of bread today. And I was like, I've had three already and I've got six to go. Yeah. I mean, the obvious one's toast with butter, but so I've got weird ones here. So people are going to think I'm weird, right? But it's dry cornflakes, because that's fine.
Why is that fine?
Because, I mean, sometimes...
What about dry frosties? Or maybe,
well, it's too much sugar.
Cornflakes taste like fuck.
Oh, well, okay. They taste a nut, and it's just something to pass the time with.
Oh, right.
It's just like a little...
Yeah.
An hors d'oeuvre, I don't know. Is it an hors d'oeuvre?
I don't imagine if that was an hors d'oeuvre.
I know. Yeah, it'd be great.
Would you care for a cornflake, sir?
Yeah, exactly. I've been a bit partial to fruit teas lately.
Oh, wow.
So it's just hot water with, like, fruit tea bag.
With a tea bag. Yeah.
And you know what? It's sand. Yeah. I mean, it's better than having a beer at night. Because otherwise, it's a difference between 120 calories.
We've had this conversation in the past, though. Have you checked the caffeine content of these things?
I have on these ones, definitely.
Tom had an issue where he was drinking green tea and couldn't work out why he was awake till 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
It's very, very caffeinated green tea.
Very caffeinated. But these ones have literally nothing in them except for, like, leaves, I don't know.
fruit leaves.
Apples, because that's a stalwart. Yeah. And pickled onions are good. Like,
a jar of pickled onions.
Yeah. I mean, I don't eat them all.
A jar of beetroot.
I haven't tried that. Okay. I might try it. But pickled onions are sound, because you can only have about six before they start getting not big ones, the small ones.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. I'm down with all that. Just quickly then, Kieran K.A., who is a subscriber to RedMenTV.com. He left this on the post of the subscriber exclusive Q&A from last week. If you could choose who would finish in the top four this season, who would you put second, third and fourth?
So Liverpool first, obviously. Then Spurs, I want to come second.
Ooh.
Just give him something.
Oh, sure.
Wolves, third, because, you know what? Yeah, they deserve it.
Why not?
Yeah, the sound. And it'll be Cody up there as well.
Oh, yeah, bit of Colin Cody, Captain Cody.
And then Everton, fourth. Wow. I want Everton to do well. I always say this, and I always get to stick off loads of Liverpool fans. But you know what?
And Evertonians, because they don't want your sympathy, Tom.
They don't want it, but I want them to do well for them, but always be so much further down than us.
I'm happy for them. I mean, this is the difference. Unfortunately, fourth gets you straight into the group stage, doesn't it? So there was something incredibly amusing about 2004, 2005, yeah. and after that, where they got hot balls in their mind yeah. out of the qualifying rounds. I think they got Villarreal in yeah. qualifying.
Yeah. I want to give them something. Just give Everton something to
yeah, like, I mean, don't get me wrong. That would shake the status quo. I'd not really yeah. thought of it that way. I'd like to pip City in the most heartbreaking fashion for them, nice. Possibly, because of the whole like that Aguero winning the league moment yeah. is the one of the most iconic league wins of all time. It's great, yeah. and but you know, so they've had that, and I just wouldn't mind seeing us pip them, because that'd be fine. And I've gone, it's probably more realistic, this Chelsea. It's the lesser of evils of Spurs finishing, pipping Arsenal and Man United to top four, because I don't think finishing fourth does anything for Spurs yeah, at this yeah. point. I think Spurs stay Spurs, and they're going to, I mean, if they finished outside of it, they'd maybe have a real question mark over Pochettino, but I don't mind Spurs just staying there, that just level, being a yeah. thing, and also finishing above Arsenal when they're now doing videos on Arsenal Fan TV, sorry, AFTV. They're doing videos about the banter era being over, and now I'm happy for the banter era to continue for a bit. That's going. Fine.
I won't watch it, but keep it going.
Well, look, Robbie's got to keep the extra wing of his house fully staffed.
I'm still not going
to
watch.
I'm so sorry. I'm just playing to the lowest common denominator there. And yeah, Man United, because, you know.
Man United fourth?
No.
I was going to say, my word.
Man United can finish 10th as far as I
but
give
then,
a
But then, I mean, if United get fourth and keep Mourinho, and then, I mean, they'll have got fourth, but then he'll keep
Man United,
going down.
Man United's next game is against Chelsea, by the way. If they could do everyone a solid there,
that would be good.
That would be absolutely delicious.
It doesn't matter what they do now. They can beat everyone and I'll be happy. Because
they stay comfortably behind us.
Yeah.
So we're going to be doing the subscriber Q&A in a second. Questions from John Cook, who asked us to pick 11 former Liverpool players to bolster our bench and squad, but they've got to be in their current conditions. Todd Bell, what songs to play in the game before the games, in the match, stadium, yes, in the ground. We're George Sefton, basically, and we get to pick some songs. What's the worst song you can come up with for one of the current Liverpool players?
I have a great one for that, so
yeah,
you
definitely
need
worth
to,
tuning
need
in
to
for.
Listen to that.
Ranking Liverpool's greatest centre forwards, thoughts on Naby Keita's time at Liverpool so far, designing Liverpool kit, and we've got an American gladiator / you know, gladiators, I guess, MMA style contest to put together at Anfield, featuring current and former Liverpool and Premier League players going head to head. Basically, there's a very good chance Mourinho's getting twatted everywhere. So yeah, get over to redmentv.com, sign up. Again, it's free for the first month, so if you want to try it out, please do come across. As a very exciting times, a brand new website coming next week, hopefully, because it's got to be tested.
Oh, yeah.
But it's looking dead good. Perfect time to sign up. We're giving you as much value as we can eke out of this. It's £5 a month thereafter. If you don't like it, you don't have to pay it. You can just see what you get, and you can go back to the archive and have a little experiment with all of that good stuff as well. Anyway, we shall see it over there. For us, it's going to be entertaining. For you, make it as entertaining as possible by going over to redmentv.com. Walk on.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.